Since when has scoring from halfway been so easy? Welcome to All Talk, all USL talk, USL covering all the latest scores, news, and developments in the second highest division of the United States men's professional soccer system, the USL Championship. I'm your host, as always, Vince Galvano, episode 9, match day 7. So much to get into. Match day 7 brought some interesting results, and even more so, some memorable moments, including, are you ready for this, a SportsCenter top 10 highlight. That's right, USL making the top 10 of SportsCenter on yesterday's edition of Sunday, April 21st of ESPN's SportsCenter. I'll let you know what that moment is right after I just get through this little show notes of the recap, right? So we're going to be doing a brief recap of Lamar Hunt US Open Cup. We'll talk about the goal of the week last time around. Match day spotlight, it's back. I had some time this weekend. Detroit against Oakland. That'll be the coverage there. We'll do a rundown of the fixtures for match day 7. We have some news out of New Mexico and a stadium. And as always, we'll preview what's ahead on USL. So that top 10 SportsCenter moment. And for those of you that don't know SportsCenter, maybe some of our listeners don't know, right? It's a daily sports news television program. This was launched way back in the day, 1979, produced and broadcasted by ESPN, which is US-based global cable and satellite sports television channel, just a channel dedicated to sports. That's right. But this, yeah, it includes highlights, analysis, updates, news, sports, whatever. It includes the illustrious top 10 plays of that day in a whole variety of sports. So on that day of the show, you'll get the previous day's top 10, a compilation, 3 minutes long, and just goes down 10 plays with some witty commentary over it. And number 6 out of 10 on Sunday, April 21st, it was the halfway goal from Juan Torres from Charleston Battery in their 4-1 victory over Tulsa. So love seeing it when USL makes the top 10 sports plays, especially on a Saturday of all things, right? That wasn't the only halfway goal this weekend, ironically. El Paso would find the lead in their game against Tampa Bay with probably, arguably, might even be better than Juan Torres' halfway goal, but it was Javier Nevarez from almost like 75 yards out. He scored a halfway goal. So we not just had one, but two halfway goals in one weekend. This league is never short of entertainment. Let me tell you, you talk about opening match day, Colin Shuttler scoring from a header to even things up for Orange County in the last minute, a goalkeeper scoring a header on a corner kick opening day. Come on. And then you say, hey, we're going to make a debut on CBS. And Louisville, we're not going to, you know, Louisville, Indy 11, we're not going to give you a one-goal game, two-goal game, three-goal game. We're going to give you 8 goals when you debut on national television for the league. And then when you think, wow, this is pretty much the best we're going to get. No. 2 halfway goals in one weekend. If anybody ever asks you, why are you watching the USL? Just pick one of those moments. I mean, there are so many you can choose from. This league is never short of entertainment. It's never short of excitement. And speaking of excitement, I have an exciting show for everyone out there today. Let's get into it. Match day 7. We had some actual, what we can say, some games in the midweek for the Lamar Hunt US Open Cup. Hear about this. Let's go. We'll go into that right away. Round 3, the good, the bad, and the ugly from Lamar Hunt US Open Cup. This took place Wednesday, April 17th, Thursday, April 18th, according to my notes here. The good, and please, you can get up and you may leave if I call your name. Las Vegas, Monterey Bay FC, Tulsa, Indy 11, Birmingham, Memphis, Loudoun on PKs, North Carolina, Hartford Athletic FC, Oakland, New Mexico United, Louisville, and Detroit. If I called your names, you can come to the front of the line. You can grab your belongings. You can, you know, make yourself at home, I should say, right? You'll get ice cream served first. You made it through. Congratulations. Here's the bad, though. Rhode Island and El Paso. They bow out on penalty kicks. Rhode Island lost to Charlotte Independence, and El Paso lost to Omaha. Yeah, really, you never want to see that. You always want USL to be performing really high and beating the teams from the lower divisions. But it's bad. It's bad. At least you go out on penalty kicks and save some of your dignity, right? Here's the ugly. Miami FC, unfortunately, losing to South Georgia. Tormenta FC of a scoreline 2-4. Miami FC in a bit of a trouble right now, stuck in a rut. This doesn't help boost confidence at all. But South Georgia Tormenta, a lot of their players usually come to the USL, and they're a really formidable side in that lower division, so not really fun to get pit up against them. A reminder, by the way, please recall this year, Lamar Hunt, US Open Cup, pay close attention. Remember, we only have 8 MLS teams in it because of complaints of schedule, right? Not many teams participating, but having instead their reserve team participate. Only 8 MLS teams in it. LAFC, Seattle, Sporting, Real Salt Lake. Who else do we have? San Jose, Houston Dynamo, FC Dallas, and Atlanta United. Those are those 8 teams, right? Round of 32 is going to take place May 7th and May 8th. And Detroit is going to be taking on Houston. So that's a nice MLS-USL clash. I think we have one more, which is New Mexico United taking on Real Salt Lake. We also have, two more in addition to that. Seattle Sounders taking on Louisville City. And then you have Las Vegas Lights taking on LAFC. Those are your 4, we could say, MLS-USL clashes. We do have another USL MLS Next Pro team taking on a USL team. That's Colorado Springs taking on NYCFC on May 8th. And we have some inter-squad, or I should say inter-conference, inter-league play. Tampa Bay Rowdies taking on Birmingham Legion. San Antonio taking on Indy 11. We have Sacramento taking on Monterey. We have North Carolina taking on Phoenix. Orange County taking on Loudoun United. Pittsburgh Riverhounds taking on FC Tulsa. And Charleston Battery will take on South Georgia Tormenta FC. That's on May 8th. 7 p.m. So that's kind of what the outlook, the lay of the land is for the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. Match day 6, if you can go in reverse, it's Tristan Traeger. Goal of the week, match day 6, Monterey Bay versus Las Vegas. That was on April 13th. The 24-year-old pulled off a deft touch to lift possession over his defender before slotting home a low finish for what proved to be, the game winner. And Monterey Bay's victory against Las Vegas Lights FC. Tristan Traeger will not only take home the game winner, he's also going to take home that match day 6 goal of the week. Congratulations to him, all the Monterey Bay fans listening, the Union fans. Hey, congrats. Love to see it, right? Game winner, goal of the week. That's it for a little bit. Those 2 news sources. Let's move on to the coveted match day spotlight, Detroit City FC taking on Oakland Roots Soccer Club. Nice, chilly, overcast day at Keyworth Stadium, 46 degrees. Plenty in attendance, which was nice to see at Keyworth Stadium. Oakland Roots going into this one with that 3-4-3 formation. I think only 2 changes from the last time they played El Paso. Detroit City FC, on the other hand, going that 4-2-3-1. Danny Dicchio taking his squad out there in that formation. No Reese Williams and Elvis Amoh from the North Carolina clash, so they didn't make it to this one for Detroit City FC. I took a look, by the way, as I usually do, in terms of those articles that USLChampionship.com posted prior to the season, talking about the new joiners, young players, defenders, midfielders, and forwards to watch. For Oakland, it was only 1 player watched, and that was Miche Nieder-Cherry, who hasn't really played that much. He's a new joiner. He's had 262 minutes played so far and no goals. That was the only goal player that was referenced from Oakland. On Detroit's side of things, you had 4, which was Devin Amomensa. That was USA defender player to watch. He was also the 23 clubs player of the year and the Black Arrow Awards for his consistency throughout the season. Last time around, he's got so far a nice tackle win percentage of 71.4 so far with 5-1 in 5 games. However, I don't think he was, he was in the starting lineup for this game. But Elvis Amo, not there, but he is doing quite well so far. 308 minutes played, 1 goal and 1 assist. He scores in the 91st percentile for recoveries in comparison to other forwards in the league. The Ghanaian averaging about 4.68 per game. So he's helping out the defense a lot. Dominic Gasso was the other one, but he's only played 13 minutes so far. He was a young player. But in any case, I mean, his shining moment, if you recall, for all Detroit fans was last year when he scored his first professional goal, which lifted LaRouge to a stunning upset of Pittsburgh Riverhounds Soccer Club in the Eastern Conference quarterfinals of the USL Championship. So that's like his claim to fame, but hasn't really seen the field, only 13 minutes so far. The other one was the Scotsman, Alistair Coote. He's only had 1 goal in 4 matches, didn't feature against Oakland, but he's got some successful crosses with 99 successful passes and an accuracy of 85%. He's in the 95th percentile compared to other midfielders and wingers for that stat. Pass accuracy, successful crosses. It's a shame we didn't see him really in this one, not starting, but I mean, it didn't hinder Detroit's performance at all. In any case, Keyworth Stadium. Nice stadium. Hey, man, soccer-specific stadium, turf field. Again, I mentioned chilly, 46 degrees, quite windy as well. On the left side, it was interesting. I mean, you want to talk about Detroit City, the Motor City. It had like these small brick-like garages that I guess are concession stands. Those were behind the left side when looking at the field from broadcast view. And then you had like some residential houses lined up one after the other. On the right side, you have the wall with the Keyworth Stadium name plattered over it, and you have some standing room, not much, but some people just hanging out, right, you know, behind the goal, photographers as well. And then right behind this wall, which is a quite big wall, you know, there's a playground, and then I think you have some train tracks right behind it. So it just feels like it's just planted in the middle of this Detroit city, or this is Detroit suburban neighborhood, wherever it is. And then you have this sort of main stands quite low, packed, and the supporters group, interestingly enough, it's not behind the goal and all, but it's actually dead center in the field, and they had the smokes, the drums going off throughout this one, making plenty of noise, supporting LaRouge in their home bout against Oakland. Let's get into it then. The first half, Levi's colliding with Cedeno in the opening 2 minutes off of a shoulder to the head, and then the subsequent free kick was Tamakas. Even though there wasn't an offside in the set piece. You know, when I saw that, I was like, oh, okay. I mean, it just seems crowded in this midfield, starting things off. Yacine Matthews was starting for Detroit. He's had 3 goals in 7 matches played last year, according to the commentary team. So not much going on. 6th minute, though. We get Levi's with the first corner for Detroit, which sailed to the far post, but then shot would go wayward over the bar by number 3, Villanueva. They took the moment as well to congratulate Blanchett, who is the goalkeeper for Oakland. He's had over 75 matches played for Oakland roots. But in any case, first half, starting off, quite chippy, you know, direct. And that's kind of how the game would progress as we'd go on. But in any case, we'd have the first goal quite early on in this contact before the 10th minute mark. Morris opens the scoring for Detroit, and he reads the play so well. Gomez receives for Oakland in midfield. He turns, he finds pressure, and then he looks to switch it to the left back or the left center back of that 3-4-3 formation. But the pass is not good enough, and it's right in front of Ben Morris. Ben Morris takes this interception. He takes a couple touches inside, and then 2 touches to his right foot to open up for the shot. Drills it low and hard to the opposite corner, and he's off to the corner doing a nice golf swing celebration. And just like that, Detroit is up in the opening 10 minutes. They have the yellow smoke going from America's most hated supporters group, and they are on the right main stand. I mean, that's just what I saw from the, they had a flag that said America's most hated supporters group. I don't know if that's a mantra, but they were putting out their yellow smoke in any case, in supporting Detroit, making some noise after Morris put them up I really like Detroit's reaction after the goal. It was like they played hard, and then they would just they would go long two or three times, and it just kept that Oakland back line so much deeper than really anticipated, and the tempo of the game increased trifold really after that goal. It was simple. Like Detroit would play short, and then we just go long, and it just opens up the space in the midfield. But however, this could be dangerous, especially if Oakland can match that intensity or even really surpass it, which is kind of what they did in the 10th minute, really right after the goal. Rodriguez found his way on a breakaway, created some space for the shot, but it was great one-on-one block tackle by the center back, Carroll from Detroit. And it could have been 1-1 right off the bat there. The 13th minute, Oakland, I thought, were quite quick going forward. Back and forth, 14th minute, we see the 50-50 ball in the air, and it was a collision that brought Jupp down, which was what Detroit needed to just put a pause on things. I think once Rodriguez found that breakaway, Oakland were starting to be quick going forward, and it just needed like just some air to be taken out of the game, and that's kind of what Detroit did in that moment, that 15th minute mark. How many fouls in this first half for those that were watching? There were a lot of whistles. 17th minute, there was a nice outside of the boot pass from the edge of the box from Oakland, and there was a header, but it went wayward. 19th minute, Rodriguez gets fouled on the line by number 12, Bryant, and the official pulls out the yellow and also gives one to Jupp for dissent. So on the opening 20 minutes, already two yellows for Detroit. And I think, I mean, in the 20th minute, when this happened, by the way, it started just to feel as if Oakland were getting the momentum in terms of the whistles, right? A lot of fouls going on. And in the 20th minute, Detroit, I think Rodriguez should have got a foul on a 50-50, but didn't. And that just boosted the tension in the ground. They were not happy with the two yellow cards the referee gave to Detroit 1 minute prior to this. And then Rodriguez, I think, should have got a foul on the 50-50, but didn't. And man, the crowd were not happy with that. 22nd minute, though, somehow Detroit didn't get a corner after Villanueva found Matthews, and then Jupp was called out for a push on a header. Things were getting a little out of control in the middle of this first half with the referee. And I mean, it just happened here. They didn't get the corner kick, and then there was a small push on a header. Referee calls it. And three players, especially Carroll, were just talking to the ref about some things. Needed like 15, 20 seconds to just calm things down. And by the way, I took a look at these stats. Six fouls for Detroit and three fouls for Oakland in the opening 23 minutes. Nine fouls in the opening 23, almost 10. And when you think, okay, the referee seems to be leaning towards Oakland, hold your horses. 24th of minute, a penalty is awarded to Detroit, and I tell you, it's some of the nicest build-up play I've seen all season, from the goalkeeper all the way up to the forward, from Steinwasher. He goes to Bryant. Bryant finds Murphy. Murphy with a nice touch to open himself in the outside towards the sideline. He then chips it forward precisely to Rodriguez. He one-touches it back to Matthews, and then Matthews just pings it far to Villanueva. It happens so fast. And that three-back line, I mean, they were exposed. So Tomakis has to, you know, haul his ass back. And Villanueva just cuts it back to his right, literally at the last moment. And Tomakis just swipes him like a credit card at the end of a grocery line. You know what I'm talking about? Swipes him from the bottom. Villanueva feels the contact. He goes down. Referee blows the whistle, points to the spot. Just when you thought Oakland were getting some momentum with the whistle, with the play, Detroit, they come back into it with this, and it's Maxi Rodriguez steps up from 12 yards. He tucks it home, even though Blanchett guessed the right way. Very nice whip on the penalty kick. And the Northern Guard, now they don't got the yellow smoke. The Ultras have the red smoke now in addition to the yellow, and the place was pumped up. Detroit's first penalty of the season. And it goes without any issues. So 2-0 in the first half an hour for Detroit. At the half hour mark, I also had some technical difficulties for the broadcast, the stream I was watching on YouTube. So I lost about 3 minutes. We came back in the 35th minute. Ball finds its way to Jupp, who fires it from distance, but it's tipped over the bar by the goalkeeper of Oakland, Blanchett. Not many passes being strung together. This was a very direct, just 46-degree overcast soccer game. I can't really describe it. I'm sure you've been there. For those that have played the game, I just felt like I've been in this situation so many times where it's just one of those, yeah, you're going to string maybe three or four passes, but then this ball is going long, or there's going to be a stoppage in play, or it's going to be a tough 50-50 ball, and so forth. And that's just kind of how the rhythm of the game, very stop-and-go game. 38th minute, Rodriguez slips the ball through the legs of the Georgian defender, number four, Marc Velashvili, the Georgian. He gets a yellow card. Nice skill move from Rodriguez. 41st minute, he's going to ante up on his skill moves. He turns nicely in the midfield. He finds Murphy, who slips it through to Levi's on the left, and he swings the ball into Matthews, but just can't direct the header towards goal. It just kind of fell awkward to that. But prior to that, a really nice overlap on the right side by Bryant to support Murphy and generate some crosses. These fullbacks in that 4-2-3-1 formation for Detroit, they were getting involved, especially late in the first half for Detroit. So it just seemed, you know, gave me the impression that Detroit, it's not, hey, we're not going to settle back, 2-0 lead. If we can get a third, or the fullbacks can get forward, we're going to keep continuing to do it. That's why they have so many wins so far this season, I imagine. 43rd minute, Levi's would carry it well into the final third. Maxi Rodriguez, let me tell you something, the joy to watch. Looked like he was having a great time. Conditions, no problem. Using left foot, right foot, top sole of the ball. Just very, very, very smooth, right? Goes off without a hitch sort of thing. One of the, I'd say, the brighter points of the first half, which was even quite stoppage and go. I mean, you want to talk about something, 18 fouls in the first half, 4 yellow cards in the first half as well. It was back and forth, but it was Detroit capitalizing early on with that individual effort. I think they would push the tempo and directness nicely after the goal, but Oakland managed to not only match it, but actually exceed it. And they were getting through on goal, but Detroit players were aggressive in their defense. Carroll with a nice 1-on-1 block. The referee was prominent in the first half. I think this was the first time from all the matchday spotlights that I've seen where the referee had put too much milk in the coffee. This is a great analogy that I heard from my brother in the world of professional wrestling, describing what a referee should do. And a good referee is like getting the right amount of milk in your coffee. You know what I'm, for the coffee drinkers out there, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And in this case, referee in the first half, too much milk in the coffee, right? Lost the flavor and was calling a lot of fouls in Oakland's favor, by the way. But in a nice build-up play that got Villanueva into space, and ironically, his referee that pointed to the spot since Demakas brought him down for the PK. So Detroit then looked pretty good, but you know, you want to talk about main players. It was like Detroit was playing, Oakland was playing, and the referee was also playing. He had his own team out there. He had his own agenda. But great atmosphere. The noise just kept growing more and more in that first half. Murphy looked great. So did Rodriguez. Oakland, on the other hand, it's like going 2-0 down didn't deter them. I liked how they just brought the intensity. They matched it. It seems like they're a team, and the commentary team put it this way. They're a team that can play with anybody. And I think they can. I think they do well matching intensity for teams in that regard. Second half, we see a change for Detroit. And the only change is going into the second half. Yazzie Matthews come off, and it's Victor Becerra who comes on. And 5 minutes into making his entrance, Becerra makes his mark to score the third goal for Detroit. And most likely, I think at this point, safe to say, to seal the 3 points. Oakland, they had some nice build-up play in the middle. Cruz dropped into the half space. He spread the ball wide to, I think it was an overlapping Rasmussen, who joined the attack superbly, that wing back. He picks his head up for the cross. And although there were two Oakland players in the box, in the center and near post, he opts for like a high lofter on the far end. That ball gets cleared out from a header. Villanueva gets a touch on it. He finds Rodriguez. And Rasmussen, pushing up, tracking back, not as strong, right? I don't think he anticipated the ball would get to the right side so quickly. It did, because it found the feet of Rodriguez, who just plays a beautiful line drive to the right side. And then it's a build-up between Morris and Bezerra. And Morris would slip Bezerra through, and he would just tuck it home low and hard, left side, similar to what Morris did in the first half a little bit. That would extend the lead to 3-0. Tough. You know, you make the run forward, you take the cross, Rasmussen, not the best cross, and then all of a sudden, somehow, seconds later, that ball ends up in the space that you left behind. And it can just happen that way. It can just happen that way, especially when playing the wing back position. 55th minute Detroit shot for Bezerra. Murphy strips the Oakland midfielder and plays it forward to Bezerra, who opens up to the right and shoots it low just past the post. Could have been 4 there easily. And the 57th minute, Rasmussen said, you know what, maybe I didn't track back, but hold my beer. I'm going to come back here and get involved in the attack once more. He comes very nicely on the left side. He gets involved into the attack. Cruz plays across nicely across the mouth of the goal. He's there. No one sees him because he's coming from that wing back position. Gets some nice contact, directs it the opposite direction, and Oakland get there. You could say consolation goal, maybe, right? But more so, they get a foot back into this game. So it's 3-1, and you're thinking, well, okay, maybe a comeback's on. Tamakas was able, I think, to find Cruz in the last second after getting mauled by Murphy, by the way, since he was looking to make up for his loss of possession. Hey, credit where credit is due. The referee played advantage. He didn't blow his whistle, and the ball was able to make it out to Cruz. So I think the referee had a look at himself in the mirror at halftime and said, I'm way too much involved here. I want to make my life a bit easier. Well, he has to make a decision. The 59th minute, red card shown to Oakland center back Mark Velashvili. The Georgian gets his second booking. It was the speedy Villanueva who got his shoulder pulled after Detroit was finding success all over that right side. A long ball was played. He wasn't going to get there. He just says, yeah, I'll pull you down. And referee's not going to tolerate it. Second yellow shown to the Georgian defender. He's off. And Oakland are down to 10 men. And I guess that was a nail in the coffin. 75th minute, you get a shot by Cedeño straight at Steinwasher. He made a meal of it, but he eventually got it under grabs. And then the 96th minute, you really had just that final action of the game, which was a low cross heading towards the box by Espeleta to Bezerra, whose shot from the center of the box just goes over the bar. It was met with a ooh from the fans, but it was also followed by some cheering because as soon as that happened, the final whistle happened. 3-1 for Detroit. Detroit City FC exhibiting a nice performance in the match, getting the 3 points. I think the team began quite strongly. Ben Morris intercepting a pass, scoring the opening goal with a low hard shot. Following the goal, team played aggressively, kept Oakland on the back foot. Maxi Rodriguez would score from the penalty, consolidating Detroit's lead. And in the second half, substitute Victor Becerra scored the third goal for Detroit, sealing the deal there despite the high number of fouls, stoppages. Detroit maintained momentum, I'd say. They secured the victory. Oakland Roots, on the other hand, challenging match, right? They kept up with Detroit's aggressive play. They were also aggressive. Despite some promising moments of play and a goal by Justin Rasmussen in the second half, Oakland was unable to overcome Detroit's lead. I think that red card to Mark Velashvili, that was really just the nail in the coffin. But despite the loss, I think the team showed some nice potential. And hey, they'll be looking to improve in their upcoming matches. Stats-wise, 50-50. I talked about a 50-50 game. Ball possession, 50-50 as well. Total shots, 18 for Detroit compared to 9 on Oakland side of things. Shots on target, 6 for Detroit, 3 for Oakland. Fouls committed. What are we thinking here? Over, under 25? Yeah, over 25. 15 fouls for Detroit. 15 fouls for Oakland. A total of 30 fouls on the board, including that double yellow for Oakland. Stop and go game. Stop and go game. But hey, we got 4 goals to show for it. So I'm never complaining when I got a lot of goals in a game. And that was really the match day spotlight. Whew. So much to cover, so much to get into. Exhausting already because forget what it's like to go through a game note by note, and there was a lot of notes in this one, but I'm more so exhausted because there were so much stoppages in the game. Just thinking back to it, it's already got me quite exhausted. We'll get into the other fixtures down the line here for match day 7. But to sum things up, Detroit City FC, 5 wins from 5. To put things into perspective, we know Charleston are doing very well right now. Charleston played 8 games so far. In those 8 games, they've had 5 wins. They've also had 3 draws. Detroit, only 5 games played right now. 5 wins to show for it. On the flip side of things, taking a look at Oakland Roots Soccer Club, they had the win on April 14th against El Paso. Things were looking on the up and up, but they're back to losing form with their loss against Detroit. They find themselves with 2 wins, 1 draw, and 4 losses. Only 1 win out of their last 5 games, the rest being losses. Minus 5 on the goal differential chart. 7 points to show from 7, but that's okay. I mean, when you look relative to last year's champions, Phoenix Rising FC, they also only have 7 points from 7, so they find themselves just below that mid-table. You can argue, hey, they're mid-table, but just right at the end, the last ticket into mid-table, we can say. 7 games played from them, 7 points. All right, elsewhere, get back into it. Loudoun United hosting Louisville. Louisville back to winning ways after their 3-2 defeat to Charleston. This game would end up 1-0 for the visitors. Louisville, it's a 67th minute own goal by Loudoun's own Velo, which was the only way these two teams were going to be separated at Segra Field. Not really much to cover in this one, but Scott Tosh won man of the match according to FopMob with an 8.3 rating out of 10. He won 6 out of 7 duels and completed 70 passes. The pass percentage completion rate of 86%. Hold on there. On the defensive side of things, 3 interceptions and 10 recoveries as well. Putting in those consistent performances and shining out in a goal, in a game, I should say, that was only separated by an own goal. Moving to another victory for the visitors. This time it would be San Antonio visiting Trinity Health Stadium, Hartford Athletics. Home stadium, they would walk away with 3 goals and 3 points. This one would end Hartford 1, San Antonio 3. And a joker is pulled with matchup Choi in 2021. This is a new signing, by the way, for San Antonio. Coming off the website, this is early in April where he signed. Earlier this month, he signed for San Antonio. That was official on their website, by the way. And he's just here playing for San Antonio, getting his first goal of the season, which is crazy. But in any case, 2021, He signed as a homegrown player with Atlanta. Since then, the 25-year-old has logged 1,006 minutes with the first team and 509 minutes between USL Championship and MLS Next Pro with Atlanta United 2. In 2023, he scored 2 goals in 19 MLS appearances. Choi also has 3 caps for South Sudan at the full international level, appearing most recently in the Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers back in January. MLS experience, as well as finding the back of the net in the MLS, well, he finds the back of the net here for San Antonio, opens the scoring. This is a new signing, coming out of nowhere, that joker that I was talking about. Epps would equalize in the 27th, but it was an own goal by Akpinonu and a penalty by Solignac to seal the deal and the 3 points for San Antonio FC. FC Tulsa hosting Charleston Battery in this one at One Oak Field, an attendance of around 3,500. Kyle Johnston was the official for this one. Charleston Battery triumphing 4-1 as visitors against Tulsa here. The Charleston Battery, this is their 3rd consecutive victory, an 8th consecutive match unbeaten. This win keeps them at the top of the USL Championship standings. We have MD Myers scoring his first brace for the Battery, contributing to the victory alongside goals from Juan David Torres and Nick Markinich. Torres' goal, as we know, that number 6 out of 10 on the SportsCenter. Noteworthy, struck from the halfway line. Despite an awarded penalty to Tulsa that resulted in a goal, Battery bounced back quickly, maintained their lead. The game was overall dominated by Charleston, nearly 60% of possession, and outshot Tulsa 10-5. The match was also a memorable one, for Emilio Icaza, who played in his 100th career USL Championship regular season match. Congratulations, Emilio Icaza. That match report provided by the Charleston Battery staff on the Charleston Battery website. And it was Portillo who scored the goal for FC Tulsa in the 37th minute. But in any case, Battery, 4 goals, and they walk away with 3 points. Miami FC, not doing too well, right? Hosting Birmingham Legion in this one. Antonio Noche, probably panicking a little bit in terms of what's going on. He's got to steer the ship as the coach for Miami FC. But in any case, it's Birmingham Legion walking away with 3 points. They scored only 1 goal in this one, as the final result was 1-0 to the visitors. Stefano Pino, he lists his left-footed shot from the center of the box to the center of the goal. That was assisted by Prosper Kasim, following a nice fast break. Only 6 shots on target in this one, 2 for Miami and 4 for Birmingham. With this loss, Miami finds itself at the bottom of the Eastern Conference, in trouble. An eventful game, arguably probably one of the most exciting games of the weekend, North Carolina hosting New Mexico United. This one ends for the visitors 3, North Carolina 2. So that's final score there. North Carolina 2, New Mexico United 3. This is according to Van Tate from KRQ E-News, Albuquerque, New Mexico. New Mexico United secured a road victory against North Carolina FC with a score of 3-2. The match began with both teams scoring 2 goals each in the first half. Julian Palacios scored the first goal of the match for North Carolina in the 16th minute. Then it was Greg Hurst from United responding by converting a nice penalty kick 3 minutes later to even up the score. North Carolina took the lead once more in the 28th minute with a header from Ezra Armstrong. However, Hurst tied the game again a minute later with his second goal of the match. You want to talk about good responses. And the game-winning goal was scored by Sergio Rivas for United as the clock hit the 91st minute. Hey, the visitors performing well. New Mexico, Birmingham getting, Charleston, San Antonio, Louisville, all getting victories on the road. But will El Paso get the victory on the road against Tampa Bay? Not quite. This game would end 1-1 between Tampa Bay and El Paso. After an evenly contested first half, El Paso found the lead in the 64th with what could end up being one of the top goals of the 2024 season. Albeit, you have to compete with that Juan David Torres halfway goal and Colin Shuttler's equalizer and so much more. But in any case, from almost 75 yards out, defender Javier Tavares shot an absolute rocket towards the goal that caught Rowdy's goalkeeper Jordan Farr absolutely off guard as the ball shot up and put El Paso up 1-0. But the Rowdies would score minutes later to bring things level, and despite their best efforts to take the lead, goalkeeper Jamali Waite put on a clinic in front of goal, registering a personal season-high 7 saves in the match. One of those saves saw the Jamaican international showcase his impressive acrobatic ability as he dove down quickly to keep out close-range Rowdy's header. This was reported by Bea Martinez, KVIA, ABC7. Thanks for the little recap there. But hey, 1-1 between El Paso and Tampa Bay. It would also finish 1-1 between the Colorado Springs Switchbacks and Indy 11. Colorado Springs Switchbacks are the first point of the season, so it's actually quite a big deal, right? About 6,687 people in attendance for this one. First point of the season against Indy 11. Colorado, is also celebrating the club's history as the team celebrates the Switchbacks' 10th season anniversary. As a club, within the first 3 minutes of the match, the Switchbacks made it on the scoreboard. It was Yosuke Hanya quickly brought the ball back up against the left sideline at the 18, crossing it between 3 Indy 11 defenders and their goalkeeper, delivering it right above Ronaldo Damos, headed it into the net. In the 31st minute, Indy 11 player Aiden Stanley, he ran to the far left side, passing it to Augustine Williams, who tipped it in. The score now even, the Switchbacks ramped up the intensity, finishing the first half with a total of 10 shots. Malik Foster had only 2 shots on target, and Ronaldo Damas had 1. In the second half, Wahab Akwe went in for a tackle and received a straight red card due to violent conduct. With the team down a man, the switchbacks had to change their strategy. Second half was heavily focused on defense, and it was crucial for the switchbacks to earn at least a point, which they did, right? They got the resilience. They finished the match with a final score of 1-1. And they will head off to play Oakland Roots next Saturday, April 27th. That was Ashley Perslow of the Colorado Springs Switchbacks FC official website with a little bit of the recap there. I like to provide a little bit different perspectives and recaps from respective teams. But in any case, Indy 11 couldn't capitalize on being a man up. In any case, both teams walk home with that point. And Colorado Springs Switchbacks can say, hey, we made it. We're no longer have 0 points on the board, but we'll get that 1 point on there, hopefully generate some momentum. And if I can quote another team in the league, by the way, that generated momentum from draws, Pittsburgh would be up there. We'll get to them shortly. Las Vegas taking on Rhode Island FC. Las Vegas 1, Rhode Island FC 2. A big one for Rhode Island fans. They made history on Saturday night, according to the Providence Journal, notching its first win of the season and in club history on the road against the Las Vegas Lights. RIFC used an early offensive push coupled with a late defensive resilience for that 3 points. Noah Fuson's first career USL championship goal, the 45th minute, proved to be the match winner as the Ocean State club weathered a late Las Vegas surge to come away with all 3 points. Rhode Island FC at the moment, 1 win, 1 loss, 4 draws, was first to break through in the 25th minute when Albert Dikwa, aka Chico, took advantage of a Las Vegas interception to send Noah Fuson streaking down the left wing with a through ball, taking the ball towards the goal line. Fuson, he cut back across into the box that found Stephen Turnbull. The defender deposited a powerful left-footed effort into the back of the net to give the Ocean State club the 1-0 lead. Late in the first half, Fuson would continue his man-of-the-match performance, getting on the score sheet in the 45th minute to give RIFC its first ever multi-goal lead. After Dick was shot from close range, was blocked, Fuson was the first to react off the rebound, slamming the ball home from point-blank range. Again, his first USL championship goal of his career. 2-0 into the locker room. Early in the second half, things got interesting as Las Vegas, 3 wins, 4 losses, and 0 draws, by the way, pulled one back when Valentin Noel scored his team leading 3rd goal of the season. Also, Valentin Noel, he was the one who scored the first goal of the USL Championship 2024 season. FYI, just a little bit of a recap. The scoring happened when Samake got on the end of a pass inside the box and sent the looping ball across the face of the goal, where Noel snuck a header past Jackson Lee at his near post in the 53rd minute. Las Vegas came within inches of an equalizer with just 7 minutes to play when Rique Alba's header off a corner nailed the near post, rolling back into the mix before Rhode Island FC eventually cleared the ball out of danger. 3 minutes later, Charlie Adams sent a bending curler that flew just wide of the woodwork. In the 90th minute, Alba got on the end of another great chance when he connected on a cross from inside the box, but couldn't keep the shot down as his one-time volley flew north of the crossbar. That was from the Providence Journal. And that, my friends and listeners, is the first win in Rhode Island FC's club history. Congratulations. I posted on my stories, I saw one of the watch parties at a nearby establishment in Rhode Island where fans were in jubilation and celebrating big time that win. It was great to see on the road there against Las Vegas. A couple more games to get into, 3, and then we'll talk other news. This is Memphis 901 FC hosting Monterey Bay FC. This one would end 2-1 for the visitors. They celebrated a significant victory, marking their 4th consecutive win for the Union. For about 30 minutes during the match, Monterey Bay FC held the top spot in the Western Conference of the USL Championship, ironically. Although this lead was short-lived, team's 2-1 win over Memphis left them in high spirits. Their top position was later claimed by Sacramento when they defeated Orange County 2-0. We'll get into that game next. But anyway, two second-half goals led Monterey Bay FCs to their victory against Memphis with Tristan Traeger and Alex Lara scoring the game-changing goals. Traeger is currently tied for the Western Conference lead in goals with 4. And the Union's goalkeeper, Anthony Sia, secured his 4th win with several saves. This victory also has further positioned Monterey Bay FC as a strong competitor in the championship. Their next match against Orange County on Saturday at 7 p.m. That article was sourced by John Devine on the Monterey Herald website. So 3 points there for Monterey Bay FC. They find themselves 1 point behind Sacramento. And yeah, it's been 3 wins in a row for Monterey Bay FC. Very impressive stuff there. Orange County Soccer Club hosting Sacramento Republic FC. And this one would end 2-0 for the visitors. Goals from Trevor Amon and midfielder Sanchez seal the deal for the visitors at the Championship Stadium in Irvine, California. The visitors opened the scoring actually in the first minute, capitalizing off an interception by captain Rodrigo Lopez. Lopez, he dribbled down the right side of the pitch, crossed the ball to a streaking Amon. Amon connected with the header off the crossbar into the back of the net, putting Sacramento ahead 1-0. The Black and Orange attempted to counter in the 23rd minute as midfielder Jafal lofted the ball over the top of the defender Owen Lamb. On the right side of the box, Lamb sent in a shot with his right foot, but that was saved by Sacramento goalkeeper Daniel Vitello. Sacramento doubled their lead 24 minutes after scoring their first goal when defender Jack Gurr found some space in the right side of the pitch. He crosses one over the head of the Orange County defense and in the path of Sanchez, who bounced a shot over goalkeeper Duran Ferry into the back of the net, giving Sacramento a 2-0 advantage. Sacramento kept the momentum on the attacking half in the 63rd minute as Sanchez found Amon in a dangerous position once again. Amon connected on a header from close range, but he missed just over the top left corner of the goal. Orange County, though, they had another chance, 74th minute, following a free kick won by midfielder Scott. Midfielder Brian Olasky sent the ensuing free kick into the box, finding the head of Miles. And Miles headed one towards goal, but missed the target just wide to the left. In the end, it was too little too late for the Black and Orange as Sacramento claimed a 2-0 victory. The Black and Orange, they return home to the Championship Stadium next Saturday. Yeah, it'll be an interesting one when they take on Monterey Bay FC at 7 p.m. There, Phoenix Rising taking on Pittsburgh Riverhounds. 3 goals for the Riverhounds in their trip to Phoenix, and it's 3 points. First win of the season for Pittsburgh. Phoenix hitting the post once here, in addition to their only getting on the score sheet once. John Krasinski provides a nice detailed account on PittsburghSoccerNow.com. He says, you know, out of the goals scored between Pittsburgh Riverhounds Soccer Club and Phoenix Rising FC, the Hounds saw goals from 3 forwards. Kaiseya Sterling, that's right, giving the Hounds lead in the first half. Then it was Edward Kitsa and Babacar Diene answering with the second half tallies, which pushed Pittsburgh past Phoenix. So Sterling scored his first goal with Pittsburgh in the 26th minute after receiving a nice, clever backheel pass from Kitsa. Soon after, Phoenix's Remy Cabral hit a left-footed shot from the center of the box to the bottom left forward. Corner, that following an assist from Pape Boye, drawing the match level, but in the second half, Kitsa, he put the Hounds in front with a quick reaction to a ball played over his way on the far post side, thanks to a nice, sharp, low pass across the box from Junior Atua. The final goal came in the 89th minute when substitute Babacar Diene capitalized on another build-up on the left side. Diene was the man on the spot and converted to a close-range chance. It's for Pittsburgh, who are 1-3-2 right now with 5 points. Their first win in Pacific or Mountain Time Zone since 2021, as they were actually on a streak prior to this one. Get ready for this. 10 straight Western trip matches without a win. But here, they capitalized, and they got that, and they break that streak, that bad streak. If you haven't seen the goal from Kaiseya Sterling, by the way, it's a really, really nice one. Clever, clever backheel pass. One of the assists of the season from Kitsa. And that's 1-3, by the way, for the final score there. Thanks to John Krasinski for the detailed account. That's the last really fixture for match day 7 I had in my coverage. Let's take a look at this match day table. In first place on the Eastern Conference, Charleston Battery with 18 points from 8 games played. Right behind them, tied in 15 each, is Louisville City FC, Detroit City FC. Then you have in, well, you can say the fourth place spot, tied on points with Tampa Bay, is Birmingham. They both have 10 points. And then you have Hartford with 9, sitting mid-table following their loss to San Antonio. They have 9 points from 5 games played. Then it goes Loudoun United, 7 points. Rhode Island FC, 7 points. North Carolina FC in 9th place with 6 points. And the bottom 3 of the Eastern Conference is Pittsburgh Riverhounds, who have 5 points from 6 games played. Indy 11 also with 5 points. Bottom of the Eastern Conference, Miami FC, only 4 points from 7 games played. They're on a 4-match losing streak at the moment in the USL Championship. Talking about teams on form, Tampa Bay Rowdies still undefeated. Detroit City FC still undefeated. Charleston Battery still undefeated. Who else do we have still undefeated? Oh, only one from the Western Conference at Sacramento Republic. They're sitting comfortably on top with 15 points in the Western Conference from 7 games played. Right behind them, Monterey Bay FC. And then you have New Mexico with 13 points sitting in third place from 6 games played. San Antonio and Orange County Soccer Club both with 12 points. Orange County, they experienced their first loss of the season. And they'll be looking to get some revenge and get back to winning ways when they host Monterey Bay. That should be an interesting one. This is the top 5 looking in the Western Conference as we move towards mid-table here. You have Las Vegas Lights FC in 6th place with 9 points. You have Phoenix Rising right behind them with 7 points. Oakland Roots also with 7 points. Those are 7th and 8th respectively. And then FC Tulsa with 5 points. And then you have, well, Memphis, El Paso, and Colorado at the bottom of the Western Conference. Memphis, though, they can say, yeah, we might be here at the bottom, but at least we won a game. There's only 2 teams that haven't won a game so far. That's El Paso, and that's Colorado Springs Switchbacks. But both teams have just drawn in their most recent match. Can't be the same for Memphis, who are on a 5-game losing streak in the championship. Top scorers, Wilson Harris with 7, Nick Markinich with 7, MD Myers with 5. It's Louisville City and Charleston Battery leading the way in terms of the scores. When it talks about assists, we have 3, tied at 3. That's Aiden Stanley from Indy 11, Jorge Hernandez from San Antonio, and Joshua Perez from Tampa Bay. That's how things are looking in the USL Championship after match day 7, we can say. Quickly, some other news. New Mexico's new stadium, Progress United, we can say, Albuquerque's new soccer stadium, scored some approval. This coming from KOB TV. The article was published on my birthday, April 12th, 2024. Just a little shout out there. In any case, the city's Environmental Planning Commission has unanimously approved plans to build a New Mexico United soccer stadium at Balloon Fiesta Park, despite opposition from some local neighborhood groups. The stadium plans to have been adjusted to minimize the impact on nearby homes, including the addition of a larger roof, specialized audio systems, and lower light poles. The capacity of the stadium remains unaffected, with room for 9,000 to 12,000 fans. Plans still need to pass the Albuquerque City Council once more before finalization. But in any case, it's the Environmental Planning Commission saying, yeah, it looks good to me. And that's going to be their soccer stadium at Balloon Fiesta Park. Match Day 8 preview. Final topic for today's show. Looking at what's ahead for Match Day 8, we have Rhode Island off of their win hosting Phoenix Rising, 2023 champions of the USL. That's Friday, April 26th, the Friday matchup, 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific. Then you have kicking things off on Saturday at the 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific time slot, Charleston Battery hosting Las Vegas Lights. We'll have Miami FC taking on San Antonio FC. That'll be at 7 p.m. on Saturday. Indy 11 taking on North Carolina FC at 7 p.m. Eastern for Pacific. Pittsburgh Riverhounds, same time slot, hosting Detroit City FC. Then half an hour later, kickoff at Tampa Bay when they host New Mexico United, 7:30, 4:30 Pacific. Then Louisville will host Hartford Athletic, 7:30, 4:30 Pacific, 7:30 Eastern, that is, right? That'll be an interesting one, Louisville taking on Hartford. And then we'll have Birmingham Legion hosting Memphis 901 FC, 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific, the Saturday, April 27th. The rest of the games are also Saturday, April 27th, with in the 9 o'clock hour, El Paso hosting FC Tulsa. Then three games in the 10 p.m., 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern. Last three games of match day 8 will be Orange County hosting Monterey Bay FC, a nice clash of the Western Conference there. It'll be interesting if Orange County can get back on track. Oakland Roots will host Colorado Springs Switchbacks. Oakland trying to get back to winning ways. Colorado Springs still searching for their first win of the season. To cap things off, we have nice interconference matchup, Sacramento Republic FC hosting Loudoun United FC. Not sure yet what will be the match day spotlight for next week, but I have a sneaking suspicion that I'll be Charleston Battery taking on Las Vegas Lights. All right, that'll really do it here for us at Talk USL. It's been a pleasure. It's been a jam-packed episode getting back to that hour mark, which is great. Also, please, I mean, hey, you have any feedback, talkuslchampionship@gmail.com. talkuslchampionship@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, the listeners out there. What are you enjoying? What do you want to see more of? What are your listening habits? When you listen to the show, let me know. Write me an email, or you can DM me as well on all social platforms. I'm with the handle @talkusl. Thank you, as always, for listening. If you want to support the podcast, make sure to give a review on whatever platform you're using to listen. Make sure to tell your fellow friends, family, most importantly, those fellow USL fans, to give it a listen. I really appreciate it. Hey, this has been All Talk, All USL. Talk USL, covering the latest scores, news, and developments in the USL Championship. Talk soon, everybody, and bye for now.